New year, new you, new things. What have you done this year? Have you gotten where you want to? If you have that intent, we can help you reach your goals. At UEI College, we offer short-term programs in healthcare, trades, and business. And we help with job assistance. UEI College has everything you need to help you along the way. Let's go, let's grow, let's get started. Text UEI to 474747. That's UEI to 474747.
Thank you for joining us. Hour number two of the Frank Sontag Show. Welcome back, or happy Friday to you and yours. I do have an in-studio guest who is a regular guest. And if you listen to KKLA at all, you know that LaVie Counseling Center sponsors this radio station. And Dr. Mark Baker is a regular guest, not only because he's a dear friend, but because, above all, I think the issue of mental health and counseling is of the essence. And actually, Doc Baker has a brand new book that's out in a week and a half, and I want to spend at least our impact segment talking about his brand new book. Dr. Mark Baker is the executive director of LaVie Counseling. His new book is called You Can Change, Stories from Angola Prison and the Psychology of Personal Transformation. Dr. Mark Baker, welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show.
Frank, good to be here. It's always good to be here and talk about all things matter. Mattering to life and godliness. So I'm looking forward to our conversation
today. I as well. Thank you so much. And you've been here in past. You've written other books. Mm-hmm. Talk about You Can Change and how this began as an idea of maybe one day it would be a book.
Well, I wrote several books already. And after an earlier book, I was that did really well. We sold a lot of copies here and around the world, and I was really praying about my next project. What can I do to have an impact to really help people change? Because as the director of a counseling center, a large counseling center for over 25 years, I saw people come in and struggle to change. And we're a Christian counseling center, so the people who come to us primarily are Christians, although not all of them. And I see these really people, good people, people in positions of leadership in the church, many pastors too, still struggling to change. They would keep doing the same things over and over and over again. So back then, 5 years ago, if you would have asked me, well, can people change? I'd say, well, they can grow. You know, you come in and if you're committed and you really are going to be disciplined, you can grow. That's the way I would have put it. And then a friend of mine who's a pastor in Atlanta said he's going to pray for me, that he wanted to give me some, believe God was going to inspire me to write my next book. And he did. And then within 2 weeks, I saw this documentary called The Farm. It was a documentary on a hospice program at the largest maximum security prison in the world. And these guys were hardened criminals. And when I saw this documentary that was nominated for Academy Award, these guys were the kindest, most loving, most gentle. They were caring for these aging, dying inmates, and when they would die, they would bury them themselves. And I thought, these guys have really changed. I had to figure out. I wanted to go and find out what was up there at the prison. Well, I found out that the prison there was the most brutal and bloodiest prison in the United States for many years, until 1995, when the warden changed and God sent a Christian to be the warden of that prison. His name is Burl Cain. He went into the prison and he said, I don't think we should warehouse criminals. The prison shouldn't be a place where we send people that we've given up on. It should be a place for moral rehabilitation. So he thought, we can rehabilitate these guys. He went in with that attitude, that we believe that everyone is created in the image of God, and everyone, no matter how bad off you are, can change. And he transformed that prison. Today, it is the safest. It is the most amazing place I've seen for personal transformation anywhere. I've been to the prison several times. And after having been to that prison, if you ask me today, can people change, I would say absolutely, because I've seen it with my own two eyes. I've seen what can happen if you follow the right biblical principles and apply it to even the most difficult of circumstances. You can change, because I've seen men do it when they've applied the right principles, given with the right attitude, which I believe are just grounded in Scripture.
Now, I suspect when he took over at Angola, it had a history of violence. I remember the Angola riots, and so he comes in with this idea of basically 180, change everything. Yep. And I don't know if you have an answer to this, but this is where my mind went. I imagine he probably got a lot of pushback early on. How did he do this?
He did. Well, here's the thing. You don't think about this, but here's the thing about prisons. Nobody cares about what goes on in prisons. You know, they're the most violent, segregated, racist places on the planet. And we send people there, and we don't even care about them anymore. So this warden went in. He could do whatever he wanted, and not very many people cared. The truth is that 80% of the guys sent to Angola, no one ever comes to even visit them. And when they die, nobody comes to claim the body. So he was able to go in, and he had free range. But instead of doing brutal things that nobody cared about, he actually did godly things, and nobody cared because, you know, these guys were locked up for life. So it was a great experimental environment. Now, he did get some pushback from people like the ACLU. They were in, and they gave him some grief about certain things. And there are a lot of people, as you can imagine, who are not happy about the fact that he started a Christian seminary inside the prison, right? So there are a lot of anti-Christian folks out there who were upset about that. But he so transformed these lives that they couldn't argue with the outcome. They couldn't argue with how different these guys were, because he was there for 20 years. So he had a 20-year time period, longer than any other warden, I think anywhere, has been in position, because he did things that worked. He started off, you're right, when he got there, it was very brutal. There were movies made about Angola. They had 40 murders a year there. It was a brutal place. Men, when they were sentenced to go to Angola, would break down in tears because they knew what a brutal place it was. They used to call it the Alcatraz of the South, or modern-day slavery, the site of modern-day slavery, because they would work these guys to death there. So when he got there, he looked around and he said, you know what? These guys need to morally get their act together. And where do we have a system of morality that's taught? He says, atheists can be moral people, but they don't have a system of morality that they teach. The church does have a system of morality. We have teachings that teach people to be better people. So he said, I'm going to start off with a Bible study in my prison. So he brought in a Bible study. That went pretty well. Guys were kind of, the light was coming on. I can change my behavior. And then he invited the New Orleans Southern Baptist Seminary to open up a branch inside the prison and offer an accredited college degree to these guys. I mean, that was revolutionary. So these guys could go to a seminary and get a college degree and get educated in Christian ministry and then come out of that and be a Christian minister there in the prison. So they were educated, number one, which changes you to get education. Two, they learned a system of morality, which is taught in the Bible. And three, they had an opportunity to then minister to the other guys there. And boy, is that ministry credible. Because here's a guy who's murdered people himself who's telling you that Jesus can change your life. And you listen. When you get somebody like that talking to you, plus they're going to watch that guy 24/7. He can't get in his brand new car and then go home and do whatever he wants at home at night. They watch him 24/7 to see if his behavior matches up with his words. And today, the warden has 200 seminary graduates inside this prison, all in every dorm in the prison, ministering to these guys to help them be more moral people and live, basically live a more godly life based on the principles in Scripture. Now, I'm making it sound simple, you know, but I'm condensing 20 years what the warden did. And what I saw was amazing. The conversations I had with these guys, you and I would enjoy having any one of them right here, right now, talking to us, their knowledge of Scripture, their wisdom, the counsel they were giving me. I teared up several times talking with these guys because of how wise they were. Because that's all they have to do is live out what they believe and become better people in the worst of environments.
Author of the brand new book, You Can Change, Dr. Mark Baker is my guest for the hour. He's from LaVie Counseling Centers. LaVieCounseling.org is their website. So you mentioned some of the interactions you had with the prisoners. Would you talk about the first time the possibility was broached to you about going to Angola and maybe what that was like for you, your thoughts, and also share when you did go for the first time, what you experienced?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Again, largest maximum security prison in the country. 90% of these guys there die there because they're there for murder, rape, and armed robbery. These guys are the hardest of hard. They've done brutal things, things that every state in the country lock people away for life. And so it was a tough crowd, really tough crowd. But what I was seeing in the documentaries and reading about this place, I knew I wanted to go. And so I started this pretty aggressive email campaign with the wardens. I finally found a warden there who would respond to my emails. Other books have been written about the prison, and not all of them were flattering. One of them, there was an investigative reporter that went in because they do a big rodeo every year, and the inmates themselves are the cowboys on the rodeo, and there are a lot of people who are upset about that, thinking that, hey, you know, you're using these prisoners like gladiators, and that's not right. And so he got a lot of pushback. You can imagine. The guy's trying to do something revolutionary. He's going to get pushback. So they were reluctant to have me come. They didn't want somebody else come in and twist the story around because I had some agenda, right? But I convinced this one warden to let me send her, so it was a female warden, a copy of my book, Jesus the Greatest Therapist Who Ever Lived. She gave it to the warden's wife, and she read it, and she said to the warden, you've got to have this guy come. This is the kind of guy we need to tell our story here, a guy who'll get us, who gets what we're trying to do. So they let me come, and I showed up for the rodeo. Every year, the biggest event they do is they put on a rodeo, and everyone comes for all over the South. They have a 15,000-seat arena where the inmates themselves put on a real rodeo. I mean, everything, bronco riding and roping and everything you see in a real rodeo, which I've seen, by the way, real rodeos, they do there, only the inmates do it. And what I found was amazing about the rodeo is that these guys so wanted to do it. They had to be good for an entire year to qualify to be in the rodeo. That's part of the warden's brilliance. He's like, all right, you want to do something like this? You got to have a clean record, a spotless record for a year before I'll even consider you in the rodeo. So he had guys cleaning up their act all over the prison because they wanted a chance at being in the rodeo. Because remember what I said, 80% of these guys, nobody ever comes to visit them. Nobody, it comes when they die. So they've become insignificant and basically worthless to the world. And they want one day where they could hear applause. They want one day where they could walk up with their head held high, thinking, maybe I do have something that people might appreciate. So, excuse me, the rodeo was a great chance for me to be there. But what I didn't realize is that when I got there, you get to walk into the prison, and there's probably about 1,000 prisoners who's qualified to mix among the people who come in. So I'm there walking around with other inmates who are walking around with other people, men, women, children. We're all just walking around inside the prison getting ready for the rodeo. And you could tell kind of who the prisoners were because they were usually in a booth selling something or there for some particular reason, but there was complete freedom for us to interact with these guys. And I was a little bit weirded out. I'm like, wait, I don't know if this guy is an axe murderer.
Right, you know? Sure.
And I'm talking about whether or not I want to buy his keychain that he made, and he's selling his keychain. And what if I haggle with him over the price and it doesn't go well, you know? I was very nervous. And what I experienced, because everyone else seemed to be acting like this was a normal thing to do, that these guys had literally changed. They were different human beings. Whatever their circumstances were that caused them to be violent and antisocial, we call it, you know, sociopaths, psychopaths, narcissistic people, whatever it was that caused them to be that kind of evil and violent person before, it has been healed. And I had conversations with guys that were just amazing. And so the first time I was there, I was just completely blown away. And I went, let me tell you this event, the second time I went there, I went back and I spent the day with the warden, actually the weekend with the warden, and we went to a church service inside the prison. They've got all these little chapels, and we're waiting to go inside our chapel that we're going to go in and hear a guy preach, and I look across over, there's a Catholic chapel, and in walk about 24 middle-aged boys and girls. They look like they're by themselves. Maybe there was a teacher with them. I don't know. Inside the prison, and they're walking into this Catholic chapel for confirmation, and they're going to their confirmation class. And so just as I see these, you know, what are they, 12 at confirmation, something like that, as they're filing in, my wife texts me, and she says to me, I'm here with my sister. We're praying for you. You're so brave being there in the prison.
And there's these kids.
Yeah, and I see these 12-year-old kids filing in for confirmation class inside the middle of the prison. I felt about as brave as a 12-year-old girl, you know, in that moment. It's so transformed there. Nobody can believe it. You can't believe it unless you go there.
Dr. Mark Baker is my guest. Here's a question. I hope I can articulate it because it really popped up as you were sharing. You are schooled in psychology,
right?
Many decades.
Right.
You are a Christian counselor.
Right.
You interact with scores of people, both Christian and non-Christian alike, come with you for a whole array of reasons, struggling with this, want to address that, clean up this, I made this mistake. Seeing what has occurred at Angola because of Burl Cain, did it change your perspective when you talk with us civilians that come to you with all sorts of stuff? And I guess in the back of my mind, my thought is, how much do you experience us, average folk, changing, not just growing?
Yeah.
Because what I was thinking was, when you, and I love the keychain analogy because that's what would go through my mind. You're talking about a population that have done the worst things,
yeah,
that have hit the bottom, for the most don't have any family, so they got nothing else versus us out here.
Right.
I just know how I can really get myself all spun up about things, and I'm like, I can be my own worst enemy, like I really want to change, but do I live in that kind of an environment?
Right.
Where it's almost mandatory if you commit to this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right. No, you're right. I'll tell you, you know, this sounds really simplistic, and I hate saying this because I've heard it my whole life, and it sounds so cliche. But you know how people say when Jesus is your only thing, he's everything, you know? It's true. You and I have so many things that are competing for our attention, for our idolization, you know, for our desires. You know, I got to get in my nice car and drive to my nice home, and I listen to the radio all the way, mainly listen to you on the way home, but other people too. I got all these distractions. These guys have nothing. They have nothing. And there's no material competition in their life. And that's the big thing, is that there's absolutely no materialism there, so there's nothing competing for what's really important in life. And so I don't want to say it's easier for them, but I'm going to say it's more radical for them. These guys are radically committed to living a life that's consistent with their values. And I'm not talking about super piety or these guys are like monks or something. No, they're just average guys. And when you talk to them, they're going to talk to you like an average guy, but they are radically committed to living a life that's consistent with their values because nothing else matters. They go back to the same bunk that everybody else has there. They eat the same food. They don't have prison uniforms there because the warden doesn't believe in them, but they wear simple clothes. They can't have any logos on them or anything. It's just simple, but they do have their individuality. But when they get up in the morning, they ask themselves the question, what's important in my life today? And for the guys that I talk to, the ones who were transformed, they would say, following God. That's what's important to me. And that drives them. They're laser focused. And I've got plenty of stories of guys that were beaten up and threatened and all kinds of, there's all kinds of bad stuff still happens in prison. And they're able to respond consistent with their values, where you and I would have a harder time because we've got all these things that are distracting us from staying focused to what we really believe. Let me say this. You and I talked about this earlier. Back 20 years ago, when Chuck Colson was doing prison fellowship ministry, you know, people have been going to prison and sharing the gospel since the days of Jesus. I mean, that's what he said. I was in prison, who came, right? Right? So well-meaning believers have been going into prison and sharing the gospel with people for 2,000 years. That is not new. So a researcher started studying, well, let's see the effectiveness of prison fellowship and all those Christian ministries that are in prison, which are good things, right? So they studied these guys and they found, yeah, it looks like some genuine conversions are going on there in prison. Guys are changing. Then they released these guys back out into the world and let's follow them then. And what they found, those guys were being reincarcerated at the same rate as everybody else.
Wow.
And boy, was Chuck Colson mad. you know, all the Christian ministers were like, that's crazy. This is terrible. It can't be true. How is that possible? Well, they didn't really become Christian. That's it. It was fake. It was like a prison religion. You know, they came up with all these explanations. And they kept studying it. And what they found is, no, these guys were genuinely changing inside prison. But when they left, they didn't get involved in a fellowship. Mm. So there's two things you need to change. You need laser focus. You need to have core values. You need to have a relationship with God, I believe, that drives you, that motivates you to follow your values. And you need fellowship. Think about it. A relationship with God is an active, vibrant, alive thing. And if you are not feeding it and encouraging it and in fellowship with other people, it's going to die. You know, you're not going to be able to maintain your focus and your values if you don't stay in fellowship. And they found that the guys that did get involved in a men's group or in a church or in a fellowship, they did not go back to prison. They stayed out because they stayed in fellowship, they stayed in encouragement, and they stayed with a group of guys who said, nope, this is what we believe. Let's follow what we believe. Don't go back to smoking. Don't do that line of cocaine. That's not where we want to go. And they help the guys stay focused. There are no Lone Ranger Christians. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Dr. Mark Baker is author of the book, You Can Change, Stories from Angola Prison and the Psychology of Personal Transformation. This book is out the first part of next month. You can pre-order it, obviously, at Amazon. You Can Change is the name of the book. And when we continue, I want to talk a little bit more about the book. I've got a question or two as it applies to the listeners and who would benefit from this. And maybe you've got a story about true change. And also later in the hour, we're going to kind of segue into general discussion about culture and the stresses of life. And obviously, levicecounseling.org is the website. Maybe you are in a position by which you know you can benefit from sitting down with a qualified Christian counselor and kind of get through some things you're dealing with on your own. Don't be alone. levicecounseling.org. Also, when we come back, we begin the segment. Many of you have asked for an update about what's going on in D.C. We'll have our two-minute Salem Radio Network update as well, and more with my guest for the hour, Dr. Mark Baker from Levy Counseling Centers. This is the Frank Sontag Show.
Deliberating at length on their first charge against President Trump.
The first article of impeachment charges the president with abuse of power. President Trump used the powers of his office to solicit a foreign nation to interfere in our elections for his own personal benefit.
It's a charge that hinges on the House assertion that the president was motivated by political, not national interests when in July of last year, he asked Ukraine's president to investigate possible links between former Vice President Joe Biden and corruption inside Ukraine. That in turn, based on the House claim that the president had no reason to suspect any corruption. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says House prosecutors are on shaky ground when they assert
that the president had no reason to believe that anything improper occurred in the Ukraine with the Bidens, and he was just out to create a political advantage. The question is, will that withstand scrutiny?
Another claim Graham says will not stand up is Nadler's charge that the president endangered the security of a U.S. ally via a quid pro quo involving U.S. aid.
He withheld the release of $391 million in vital military assistance appropriated by Congress on a bipartisan basis, which Ukraine needed to fight Russian aggression.
Senator Graham says it's simply not true.
As you fast forward, they're making the argument that Donald Trump's temporary freeze of funds called the Ukrainian army to collapse and people die. Nothing could be further from the truth. They got more aid from the Trump administration, the Obama administration, and when you look at what people were saying on the ground, they had capability they never had before.
Because, Republicans argue, the assistance eventually granted by President Trump included lethal military aid, something that had been denied under the previous administration. Friday gives the House impeachment managers the final chance to make their case. The day will be devoted to Article 2, the charge that the president obstructed Congress. Bob Agnew, Capitol Hill.
Our official update from yesterday's proceedings, obviously today is still going on, from the Salem Radio Network. Dr. Mark Baker is executive director of Levy Counseling Centers. His new book, You Can Change, Stories from Angola Prison and the Psychology of Personal Transformation. Would you share a story of maybe somebody you've met that is either in the book or not, but perfectly exemplifies how, my goodness, you can really change your life when you follow Jesus.
You can. I'll tell you the most dramatic story. Let me go with that one. It's not typical. But there was this guy that the warden wanted me to meet, and they called him, he had a nickname of Carolina. he's there for murder, never getting out. He knows he's never getting out. And I don't know how many people he'd murdered either. And they don't really like to talk about that because they're not proud of it. So he said, but you got to meet with this guy. Because when he went into the prison for the last time, he'd been in and out of prisons his whole life. He was there forever, and he was one of the most hardened, most violent men in the prison. He was known to be the most violent guy in the prison. And the way they established that is just as you know, that he would pick who he thought was the most violent guy and just beat him into a pulp. And that establishes himself, and so everyone fears him. So he was to be the most feared guy in the prison. Well, he decided, he'd heard that when there was one of these ministries that was coming in from the outside, they call them free people from the outside coming in, they bring free people food. He thought, well, the food might be pretty good there. So I'm going to go to this free people event. Well, it was called a Kairos event where they were sharing stories. And he said, there's nothing that made me puke more than seeing a man cry. So when I went into that and there was some guy crying about his pharmaceutical addiction problem or his wife ran away with the milkman, I was so disgusted.
Wow.
I was getting ready to throw a table over so they would come and get me and pull me out of this meeting. But I wanted to finish my chocolate chip cookie first. So he said, I'm finishing my chocolate chip cookie. And I literally went blind. He said, I couldn't see anything. I couldn't hear anything. Everything was completely dark. And he said, for the first time in my life, I didn't hate. I didn't know what else was going on other than I couldn't see, I couldn't hear, and I didn't hate. And he said, it was terrifying because my hatred had been my motivation for life. That's how I dealt with people. That's how I scared people. That's how I survived. And I didn't hate. And it took him several hours before he actually regained his sight and his hearing. And he sought out some of the other prisoners who had been there to say, what happened? I mean, what is going on here? And they said, I think God's calling you. I think God has reached into your heart and snatched the hatred out of your heart. That's what I think is going on. And he said, I had no idea what was going on, had no idea what love was. I certainly had no respect for these Christian guys. They were the guys I preyed on because I viewed them as weak. But I had been so struck down, literally deaf and dumb, that I was now listening for the first time to these guys. And gradually, just like Ananias and Sapphira with Paul, there were some guys that came alongside him and explained to him his experience of the grace of God for the first time. We had no knowledge of, never went to church, had no idea what was happening to him. He realized that God had called his name. He said it was like someone was calling your name, but you didn't recognize the voice. That's how he told it to me. He said, so I started meeting with these guys. I gave my life to Christ, and I realized that God was calling me. And what God was calling me to was a mission to these men. My missionary field, he said, he read Ezekiel 3, which says, I've called you to the people who speak your own language. He said, I speak their language. God has called me to minister to these guys. That's my calling. I mean, I was like blown away. And I'm thinking, okay, this guy's making this up because he's heard the Paul story on the road to Damascus, right? Because he's heard it, and so maybe he's just telling me because he knows I've read the Bible or something. And so he keeps going, and he tells me that the warden is so convinced in his transformation, the warden sends this guy to other prisons as a missionary. So this guy went back to a prison he'd been to before, Carolina, and they all knew him there to be a violent man, right? And
well, who's this new guy?
Yeah, that. Well, they didn't know he was new, right?
Right, right, right.
Yet, and so he went up to the most violent guy in the prison. But instead of beating him,
wow,
he started sharing the gospel with the guy. Well, the guy didn't like what he was hearing,
for sure.
And so the way they solve disputes in prison is he just beat the crud out of Carolina, beat him all the way down to the floor, and Carolina. The guards came and pulled him off, and Carolina stood up, spitting blood, and he hugged the guy and says, I love you, brother, and I forgive you. Just blood all over his face because, you know, the face really bleeds a lot. They locked the guy up. They let him out. Carolina continued to minister to this guy and won him over with love. He started giving the guy food, sharing stories from the scripture about him, and the guy couldn't understand it. usually when you beat a guy into submission in prison, that means he's your punk and he has to go and give you everything you want, including sexual stuff, you know. But he could tell something else was different about this guy. This guy is giving me things, but he's not afraid of me. He's giving me things, and what he found out later was because he loves me. And this new guy, the new violent guy, had no way of understanding this. And after 3 months of Carolina doing this every single day with this guy, the guy finally came to his bunk and he said, "You got to stop giving me stuff. I don't want anything from you." And he burst into tears and came to Christ. Now, my point is this. That's a changed man. Carolina is a changed man. Because he said there were several times when the guy, you know, beat him, and his first inclination was
fight back
to entertain this
for
fool.
Sure.
Is what he told me. Like, he said, and when he stood up and the blood all over his face, he said, "I'm going to entertain this fool." And there were several times over this course when he was ministering to this guy, when he would hear from God, "You need to love this man," and Carolina would say, "No, I'm going to kill him. Then you can love him."
Right.
And he would get a whisper back from God, "No, your job is to love him." Right. This is a changed man, a man who we would say is a sociopath before, is healed of an antisocial personality disorder, and able to respond not in denial. He wasn't denying that he had these violent impulses. He was able to control them because he had the power of God to be a changed human being. And his witness is profound. Is profound because here's a guy who's able to have all these real feelings but manage them in a new way that is a model for moral rehabilitation for these guys that they'd never seen before.
Wow, what a story. Dr. Mark Baker is my guest. Mark, we've got a couple of minutes before we need to break. I want to ask one more question about the book. Share with the listeners about anything that comes up, why you wrote the book, what you want to convey to them. Obviously, my hope is they will pick it up, pre-order, et cetera, but you've shared these powerful stories about men in prison that have changed.
Right.
And I suspect there's some listeners that are like, okay, well, I like stories, but what about me? And
right.
How does this impact me?
Right. The book is really not about prison reform, and it's really not about prisons. It's about what are the principles that are really buried in Scripture that we all need to change. Things like vulnerability and hope and transparency and faith and God and how to access the power of God. These are the principles that I spell out in the book. The book is really for men and women both. It's not just for people who are interested in going to prisons. If you've never been to a prison or never going to go to a prison, you can still benefit. Like vulnerability. What I found is that in order to change, you have to be vulnerable. You can't change without being vulnerable. And it takes courage to be vulnerable, and you have to be vulnerable with the right people, not just with anyone, with the right people. And then you have to be open to the grace of God to heal the shame in your life. And these guys have figured out that process, how to be in such a hard atmosphere with such hard guys around them, still vulnerable. They are Christ-like in their vulnerability around violent men all day long. So, I mean, they're amazing examples of vulnerability. If you think vulnerability is hard in your life, read this book, and you'll see models of vulnerability that'll blow you away. You can be vulnerable with people in a way that changes you and changes them. It changes both of us to be vulnerable in the way that Jesus was. And that's just one of the many principles that are in the book that helps us understand what we all need to change. But really, the book is about how do we change, all of us in the church, and primarily us as Christians? How come here we are, we've come to Christ, we go to church, and we still keep doing the same stuff all over again? We still keep doing the same dysfunctional behavior. There are certain principles of change that we spell out in the book here that apply to all of our lives. These are just very, very dramatic examples of guys who've been able to figure it out. And it doesn't take a PhD. But it does take a commitment and understanding of what those principles are for change.
The book is called You Can Change, Stories from Angola Prison and the Psychology of Personal Transformation. You can pre-order it at Amazon, etc. And I would encourage everybody to actually look into it, pick it up. We'll obviously talk more in future programs about it. You Can Change by Dr. Mark Baker is his brand new book. If you want to reach out to Dr. Baker, LaVieCounseling.org is their website. And when we continue, we're going to talk about the state of things in our culture and just how do we navigate through so many of these stressful situations. And maybe Doc Baker has an example or two But ultimately, not only because of the book, You Can Change, but we always embrace Dr. Baker's expertise, LaVieCounseling.org. We all can benefit at times in our lives, just kind of taking a look at some things. And we're grateful that LaVie Counseling has been a longtime sponsor of this program and this radio station. And we encourage you to reach out to them. More of the Frank Sontag Show with Dr. Mark Baker next. Thank you for joining us here on the Frank Sontag Show. My guest for the hour, the executive director of LaVie Counseling Centers, Dr. Mark Baker, his new book. I've been perusing it. I'm going to pre-order mine when I get off the air right away. You Can Change, a great, powerful book that we all can benefit from reading. So, couple things. If you would, just have the freedom to jump into, the latest of today and all the stresses and how do we get through this, and just talk about, obviously, and I will as well, the importance of seeking out good counsel,
right?
Especially if you're dealing with something that may has been dormant for a long time, you know, deep levels of abuse or hurt. Talk about LaVie Counseling.
Right. We are a large counseling center in Pasadena and Santa Monica. We have almost 40 therapists on staff. Everyone's a Christian. And we work with everybody. And people come to us who are not Christian. Most are, but everyone who comes to us knows that that's our worldview. That's our background. So we're in support of marriage and restoring marriages and support of helping people live genuine, vulnerable, authentic lives. And what we have found is that people have struggled with things for years before they have the courage to reach out and ask for help. They think it's a sign of a weakness to ask for help. And they sort of miss the whole point of what a really powerful life is. A powerful life is based on vulnerability, not on invulnerability. That's a facade. So we encourage people to vulnerably reach out and ask for help. If you have patterns in your marriages where you're getting stuck with these fights, I have several couples that I meet with every week who are deeply committed Christian leaders in their church, and they still find themselves fighting over the smallest of things, you know, fighting over finances or a tone of voice or the way you said that. And now I resent you for having spoken to my children that way. Maybe it's a blended marriage. And we help them figure out how to speak to each other in a way that creates connection. We now know that in most marriages, 70% of the time, you don't completely solve problems. That means that most of the stuff that comes up, you come to a way of working with the other person, agreeing to disagree. Maybe you just stop talking about it, but you don't really come to 100% solution on 70% of the things you talk about. What you do come to is a feeling of connection. Like, I can say to you, well, you know, I don't see it that way, but I certainly respect the fact that you see it that way. And what we want at the end of every conflict is for you to be able to say to the other person, well, I'm glad we brought this up, not I'm sorry we ever talked about it. That's not what we want. Whether you come to agreement is secondary. Whether or not you feel connected and supportive and respecting each other, that's our goal. So we can teach people these skills. And it has nothing to do with a lack of faith. You know, I'm surprised often, you know, when I read the gospel stories and I see that Jesus, you know, met with the disciples and they knew him and they walked with him and they saw him perform miracles. And still, remember, they bickered among each other who was the greatest. And when the new kingdom comes, who's going to be the leader in the new kingdom and not the other guy? They were still insecure, still bickering, still dealing with low self-esteem issues, even though they actually walked with our Lord, you know. I'd like to believe, well, if I was one of them, that, you know.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't be that way.
Well, I wouldn't be that way. I mean, he's standing right in front of me, you know.
For sure.
I'm going to be like my best version of myself.
For sure.
No, the point is, it was not a lack of faith on their part. It was their unhealed shame. It was their resentment that they weren't dealing with. It was insecurity. It was feelings of guilt. And who knows whatever backstory these guys had that was causing them to compete with each other in insecure ways, even though they knew God face to face and they were actually committed in their faith to him, their psychological problems still were tripping them up. So I'm encouraged by that, actually, because then it helps me understand why I still fall down today, you know, and I can get help with those things. We provide help for those things. It's not a lack of faith on your part to ask for help. It's just smart. We've got the same issues. And if you read the New Testament, Paul is always ripping into the church about something. Hey, stop doing that. Stop doing this. You guys are wrong over here. Stop doing that behavior over there. We're just like that. People haven't changed that much in 2,000 years. We need help, and we need help from each other. If you seek the wise counsel of others, you're going to solve the problems in your life. And if you don't, your plans are going to fail. And we provide that counsel to help people resolve their problems, their depression, their anxiety, literal mental disorders. Sometimes people need medication. Yes, you heard me say it. Sometimes we need medical doctors to give us medication to deal with mental disorders or depression. And we help you decide that. We don't give medication because we do talk therapy, but we'll help you decide if you need it. It is not a lack of faith to face the emotional struggles in your life. It is because we have faith that we need to be the best examples of health in our world today. That's our witness. So I think we have a moral obligation to get our act together and really work on ourselves so we can be that example for those in the world.
Dr. Mark Baker is Executive Director of LaVie Counseling Centers. What would be some of the best ways people listening can reach out? Obviously, the website, LaVieCounseling.org.
Yep, and we've got a number they can call, 800-801-5242. That's 800-801-5242. We call that our KKLA helpline. That's a number we use when we go on the air here and we give it out to people and say, if you heard us on KKLA, call us there. One of our therapists will call you back. You can come see us in person. We're going to be at the KKLA Health Fair tomorrow at PASNAZ from 8 until noon. That's the first Nazarene First Church of the Nazarene in Pasadena. Tomorrow from 8 to noon, we'll have therapists there. You can sit down and talk with them. I'm going to be speaking at Brentwood Presbyterian Church Sunday morning, 9:15 a.m. That's in Brentwood on San Vicente Boulevard on how to change and how to deal with shame and change. Brentwood Presbyterian Church, 9:15. And I'm going to be at the Kingdom Men's Gathering on February 22nd. It's coming up next month. And I think that's one of the most powerful things we've got going here in Los Angeles, is to have men come together in community. What I told you I found with those guys that got saved in prison and then went out and then went back to crime, they weren't in a men's group. They weren't in men's fellowship. And the Kingdom's Men Gathering that's happening on February 22nd over at Faithful Central, we're going to be there. We're going to have a booth there. And usually there's at least 1,000 guys that show up for that. Yeah. And I really support that. Men need other men at this point in history more than they ever have before in order to encourage each other and stay on the path to good behavior.
By the way, I know a little bit about the Kingdom Men's Gathering. It's never been announced. We're going to start announcing it next week. But since Dr. Baker made mention, February 22nd, Faithful Central Bible Church, Bishop Ulmer will be preaching. Former Heisman Trophy winner, Hall of Famer Tim Brown will be there. Chris Broussard from FS1, founder of the King Movement. Matthew Barnett from the Dream Center. We just talked to him yesterday. I'll be there as well. Tickets are available. Just go to franksontag.com, probably the easiest way. And we do hope to see you on February 22nd at Faithful for our KMG event. Dr. Baker and LaVie will be tomorrow out at PASNAZ for our fifth annual KKLA Health Fair. And again, reach out. If you need some help, need to talk to somebody, reach out to LaVie Counseling. LaVieCounseling.org is the website, LaVieCounseling.org. And as Dr. Baker said, the helpline, KKLA helpline, is 800-801-5242. 800-801-5242. His new book is called You Can Change. Dr. Mark Baker, thank you for all you do.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for your ministry, too.
God bless you.
You too.
More of the Frank Sontag Show next.